nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide program on Radio Miraya, and this is our discussion hour. Gabriel Shadar, today the program is hosting representatives from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, known as FAO, and the United Nations Office of Project Services, that is UNOPS. The guests will be speaking about the three key projects they have been implementing in South Sudan, namely the Emergency Locust Response Project, Resilient Agricultural Livelihoods Project, and Productive Safety Net for Socio-Economic Opportunities Project. My guests are Dr. John Canisio, Undersecretary for Agriculture and Food Security, Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security. Welcome, Dr. John Canisio.
Thank you for having me.
And also, I have in the studio with me Meshak Malo, representative of Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, known as FAO. Welcome, Meshak.
Thank you, Gabriel, for having me too.
And last but not least is Leslie Mhara, acting country manager for the United Nations Office for Project Services. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you very much, Gabriel, and good evening to you listeners.
Yes, we are hosting the three guests today because they are implementing the three projects that I have spoken about, but I will give them the chance to give us an idea. But first, let's know and have an idea why these programs are being implemented and how the purpose relates to the current humanitarian or food security situation in South Sudan. That question will go to the government representative, Dr. John Canisio.
Thank you, Gabriel, and listeners. The Minister of Agriculture is implementing three World Bank funded projects. These are the Emergency Locust Response Project, worth $50.7 million. This is a 3-year project that started in 2021 and runs until 2024. It aims to respond to the threat posed by the locust outbreak, protect and restore livelihoods, and strengthen systems for preparedness. Implementation is securely by the UNOPS and FAO, my colleagues who are here, and it targets the states, several counties in Eastern Equatoria, Central Equatoria, Northern Bahr el-Ghazal, and Upper Nile State. The second project is Resilient Agricultural Livelihoods Project. It's worth $62.5. It aims to strengthen the capacity of farmers and their organizations and improve agricultural production and productivity. It runs in also a number of states, Central Equatoria, Western Equatoria, Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Jonglei State. Then the last is the productive capacity. The Resilient Agricultural Livelihood Project is implemented by FAO. And the third and last, funded by the World Bank, is a productive safety net for socioeconomic opportunities. It's worth $129 million. It is for 4 years, between 2022 and 2026. The aim is to provide cash transfers and access to income-generating opportunities, and strengthen the national safety net delivery system. I think this, in short, are the three projects funded by the World Bank.
How are they relating to the situation reported in South Sudan, where the people are speaking about lack of food for many people? Most of, if it is not 90%, it is more than 80% of the population. How does it connect?
The connection is this. The first project, which is Emergency Locust Response Project, we all know, some 2 years back, there was locust invasion of the whole region, including South Sudan, and locusts by their nature, they devastate, farms, and this did happen, and even the trees and nature resources, which will undermine food security. Mm. So tackling them is like limiting the damage to, the food basket of people. The second project, targets the capacity of farmers and their organization, and to improve directly the production and productivity. You know, our farmers, still practice traditional agriculture, and they are not well organized together to make the most out of, their farms. Mm. So by building their capacity, developing their capacity, and also empowering them with better agricultural practices and means and tools, they will be able to produce more and seal the gap that we have in the country. For the productive safety net, as you will hear it also from UNOPS,
yeah.
It is essentially targeting the vulnerable. You know, even if, all are farming, there is a segment of the society who are unable for one reason or another, whether it is, poverty, whether it is disability,
mm-hmm.
they cannot engage in farming and will be vulnerable to food security.
Yeah.
So cash transfers to this segment will help them either maybe hire other people to farm for them, or maybe do business and they use the income to access food.
Yep. Okay. Now, the listeners, Radio Mirai, where you are still listening to this discussion hour with me, Gabriel Shadar. I have in the studio with me, who have just spoken, Dr. John Canisio, the Undersecretary for Agriculture and Food Security, the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security. Now, let's have a closer look at each of these projects by the implementers in terms of identification of the areas, and also in the target groups and the progress so far made. Let me start with the representative of FAO, Ms. Sheikh Malo.
Yeah, thank you so much. As Dr. Canisio has said, one of the areas that this project begins to look at is the area of closing the gap in food production and productivity. And on this, Gabriel Shadar, I think that we in South Sudan don't need to be very, very tough on ourselves. Just a month ago, we released the crop production for last year. And when you look at that, the country was able to produce about 900,000 metric tons of food. It did not fill the gap, which is about 1.5. So we were left with a deficit of almost 600 metric tons. But you can see that if we can consolidate peace, this country is able to fill that gap. So that is one of the areas. And that was done in about 4% of the total land. But importantly, it did not fill the gap, but it saved, the South Sudanese saved themselves from famine by that production. So that is one positive element. And just to inform you that it was a 10% increase from the previous years. Mm. So if momentum can be sustained, and particularly peace, then that gap can be closed. And this project, one of the areas, is closing that gap.
Mm.
The second area is in coming together to work as groups, so that we can aggregate our ideas together, and so that products can be aggregated, and so that extension can be done, facilitated quickly. So the area of cooperative development is a significant area in this. And this project last month just supported all the 10 state ministers and also from the three administrative areas on a study tour for us to understand together and learn from our brotherly country, Kenya, which is actually number one in cooperative development in Africa, mm-hmm. and number seven in the world. So we were able to learn quite a number of things that we are going to push forward. And so that aspect of aggregation and cooperative is something that is important. The third area that we look at is some low-lying value chains that can be developed and can be moved forward. So these are some of the areas, and so far, this project looks at different areas across the country,
mm-hmm.
five states, as had been mentioned earlier by Dr. Canisio.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah, let me hear from the UNOPS representative here also, Leslie Mhara, about the projects you are implementing. How do you go about them?
Thank you very much, Gabriel. First, I would really want to thank the government of South Sudan, specifically the Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, and the World Bank for coming up with these life-changing programs. UNOPS has been supporting the government mainly on social protection projects, which, like Dr. Kanisio did mention earlier, look specifically at income security as well as strengthening of the safety delivery tools for the government of South Sudan. So in achieving this, we mainly look at two main categories of beneficiaries. Firstly, those households with able-bodied members who participate in what we call labor-intensive public works, after which they are provided with cash transfers with the aim of ensuring that they are able to support their families, immediate food needs, as well as income security, spreading into income generating activities, savings, as well as meeting other household needs. Then secondly, we look at what we call direct income support, where we do support households who do not have able-bodied members to participate in labor-intensive public works, which are selected mainly from four categories, mostly households who are child-headed, households which are female-headed, households which are living with the chronically ill, of people with disabilities, and these households are supported again at the same threshold, but without them engaging in any work, since they do not have any able-bodied members within those families. As a cross-cutting measure, we also look at ensuring that as part of those targeted households, 60% at least should be female headed households, as a way of supporting the most marginalized segments of the community.
This is very interesting. How do you go about this? Even where you reach, say, I'm picking this one, I'm not picking this one, how do you work it out? And I understand the government is involved in that thing.
Yes, thank you. So like I said earlier, UNOPS is just facilitating and implementing on behalf of the Minister of Agriculture. So through the government structures, there is what we call an institutional structure, which starts right from the national level down to the grassroots at the Boma level, which works specifically at those different levels in terms of the selection of the different counties where the project is operational in, as well as the PIAMs, Bomas, and the beneficiaries. So currently, the projects are operational in 10 counties, soon also expanding to 15 counties across the three regions of South Sudan, as well as the 10 states of South Sudan as well. In terms of the selection of the beneficiaries, this is a community-based approach. Like you've said, we are only facilitating, the beneficiaries are the ones who really know themselves. They stay together
because
on a daily basis.
Because you are outsiders. You can't go and pick who is It's people themselves should know and identify themselves to do that.
Correct.
Now, how does the emergency locust response, because this is about the locust, does it go to see where locust has landed or affected and start working there, or what is it?
For the emergency locusts, as you know, a lot of work was done, and the important thing is that they are the flight, what we may call the flight paths, and where if the locusts were to come to South Sudan, they would pass. Those are the areas that are targeted, and being that, as Dr. Kanito said, we already had an experience in these areas of Iquitos flying through, past Lijongle, and going all that way up as they go towards Rank is a flight path. So there's a lot of arrangement along that, given that historical data to look at those areas.
So the selection of beneficiaries is not random?
Not random.
You have to do it deliberately. So people shouldn't worry or wonder why these areas are selected, others are left out. That is a common question being asked here. Now, given the huge figures of the people who are affected by a bad humanitarian situation in South Sudan, and looking at the figures at in the supported groups, this looks like a drop in the ocean. What does it take, Dr. Canisio, to change the narrative here and to change the situation?
You're right. It could be described as a drop in an ocean. Nonetheless, the journey of 1,000 miles start but with one step. Needs are actually huge in this country. Even if we have the best or the most resources still will not be able to cover all the needs. So what is happening? This is actually an effort by the government, by contacting the partner, the World Bank. Remember, the government of South Sudan is a member of the World Bank, and it has the right to borrow and be given grants. So it reached out to the World Bank to source these grants. At times, even the government took loans. And because there are so many members of the World Bank, so the resources will be given not exactly to, you know, the scale of your need, but will be given actually like how we got it. On the other hand, of course, the government is also trying on its own to use the little resources amidst the economic crisis that we have to do something. But all is not enough. I agree with you. So that's why the issue of prioritization, you know, comes in. And this is what leads to the complaint. Every South Sudanese is in dire need.
Everyone. So, but you have to start somewhere. And you have to... but where are we now? Are you in an emergency phase or a development phase?
We are at the crossroad. Let me say crossroad. And this is what we call, you know, humanitarian, you know, peace, development nexus. And this is now the, you can say, the thrust of the government. We are moving away from humanitarian to, you know, to development. But we are aware that, you know, the need for humanitarian assistance still exists. But we cannot actually remain there forever. See, this country has been actually through humanitarian for decades, humanitarian, you know, phase. So these projects we mentioned are just the bridge between humanitarian and development. Because in humanitarian, you deliver only maybe food assistance, you deliver cash assistance. But when you get people to do work, to produce, this is now moving them towards resilience and development.
Listeners, Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, and today I have guests from the government, that is from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, and from FAO, and from UNOPS, that is the United Nations Office for Project Services. And we will continue after a very short interlude.
101 FM Radio Miraya, powered by the people, uniting the nation, your preferred station, the voice of peace. No more, no one like you. Radio Miraya, Radio Miraya. No more, one like you, one like you.
Salam alaikum. اسم تاعي بطرس فاطمه الاندريه نحن عايزين ساوث سودان اللي فيه سلام ساوث سودان اللي فوقه مساواه ساوث سودان اللي الناس بيقدر يعيشوا مع بعض في محبه ساوث سودان اللي الناس بيكون في يونيتي مع بعض لان في النهايه نحن كلنا نحن الناس بتاع ساوث سودان
جنوب السودان فجر جديد بداية جديدة دعونا نحتفل بالسلام عليكم
سلام Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Yes, welcome. And again, this is Nationwide on Radio Mirai with me, Gabriel Shadar, and with me in the studio are my guests today, Dr. John Canisio, the Secretary of for Agriculture and Food Security in the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, and Meshek Malo, Representative of Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, which is known also as FAO, and Leslie Mhara, the Acting Country Manager for the United Nations Office for Project Services, known as UNOPS. And we are discussing three projects they are implementing. I mean, these agencies and the government, of course, implementing in the country. And my next question is, like, how do we confirm local ownership in the projects so that the target groups would not relapse to a worse situation. So the question is for the three of you, and maybe Meshek, you can start.
Yeah, I think that's important that when we're developing these projects, inherent in them is an exit strategy and a sustainability strategy. It all begins with the planning stage. As Dr. Kanisia said, once this is conceptualized, even at the national level, then goes to the community level for people to own this. Like in the labor-based public works, it's they, for instance, build up a road, which is their own. They get involved in it. So that involvement, then it means that in future, when there is a need for its maintenance, they are the ones who did it.
Yeah.
And so they are able to maintain it easily. When it comes to the distribution of seeds or what we give, trying to develop those local markets for this to happen is very, very important. And given our situation, although that is unlikely to happen very in the near future, but we give those open pollinated seed varieties that can be able to germinate. So it is these small sustainability aspects that are very important. Let me leave it at that for...
Yeah, let me go to Leslie.
Yeah, thank you very much again, Gabriel. As I indicated earlier, one of the things which we look at is strengthening of the safe net delivery tools. As part of that, it also encourages the ownership through, you know, the presence of the government right from the national level down to the grassroots. Mm. Over and above that, we also have community-based committees who are selected within the communities and by the communities, who assist them in terms of right from the planning stage to the selection of the public works, like Mission did mention, as well as the actual implementation. It also goes through to the selection of the beneficiaries, as well as the selection of the actual work which they do, which all comes from the community themselves, and hence they have that full sense of ownership. The cash transfer element again brings that flexibility in terms of what the communities deem fit for use for that the cash they are receiving. Dr. Kanisha spoke about earlier investment of the cash into agricultural related projects, for example, to increase productivity. There are also elements around income generating activities which the communities also do partake in, using the cash which they receive. There are also elements to do with the stimulation of the local communities or local economy, again through the cash transfers. So all that build onto the ownership of these projects by the different communities whom we are working with.
Yeah, great to hear. Maybe Dr. John Caniso, if you have an addition to that, but also you can answer a question about, this is about money. And money has a big issue here in the developing world. And so the question is actually, how do you ensure accountability and transparency in the process, especially when it goes to the ownership at the lowest levels? And then you add to the answer to the other question. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. After the project areas have been identified, and usually this is actually using a very transparent criteria agreed with the donors, and they are standard. In our case, as Minister of Agriculture, the most important is the food security, level of those areas. This is actually guiding, but after all areas have been actually selected, we usually don't go and tell the implementing partners, you go and implement. It has to first start with the state authority, then the local authority. They will be taken through, an inception of the project, and it will involve the community and assuring them that this is your project. You are responsible for it. This is something that came to you, and you have to embrace it. So dialogue will happen. Sometimes there could be concepts that we had which the community will alter. We allow that to just make sure that they own it. So at the government level, at the local, even government level, the community, as you heard from Leslie, you know, the community will be well aware about it and will participate in implementing the project. When it comes to money, yes, the money, of course, does not flow as money in all cases except for the cash transfer. But in terms of project benefits, like agricultural tools, seeds, as you heard from the country representative of FAO, in terms of training. So empowering people through training, that is by itself is actually an element of sustainability. So what happens, the implementing partners have monitoring and evaluation units, and the government at our level, the ministry, we have got a project coordination unit which follows up on the implementing partners. We don't leave them alone. So we do go to the field regularly to check what they have put in the reports. And we interview people on the ground to know exactly what happened. And when there are issues, we sit with our implementing partners and we iron out. So we do follow. And on top of that, the donor does not leave us alone. Mm. The World Bank also has got its monitoring, yeah, you know, yeah, and evaluation unit, mm, which goes to also verify what we have certified. Because what the implementer does, we look at it, we check it, then we submit it to the donor. The donor, on its own, also goes to check. So there are checks and balances to make sure that money really goes to the rightful beneficiaries.
This is actually a very good news and a very good example you are telling us here, because the assumption outside there is like, okay, what are these NGO guys doing here? We don't see anything they are doing. But when they listen to these examples you are telling us here about this resilience and also productive safety net and low-cost response project, these are tangible and there are people who are out there. Perhaps this is an opportunity for each one of you or any one of you to give us some sort of how they are seeing the change happening even in the life of one person through some of the things you might have been doing in these processes. You might have an example in one area or one person how the benefit and the use of this thing has changing life and changing the narrative there. Any one of you can start.
Yeah, maybe I can start. Yeah. Maybe just to add to what Dr. Kanisio talked about in terms of accountability as well, mm, where specifically for social protection and the cash transfers, the government has a harmonized management information system where each beneficiary who does receive the cash is authenticated biometrically. So you can be able to follow up to make sure that, yes, Leslie, did receive money on this particular day, on this particular time, and that system is open for people to be able to cross-check. Mm-hmm. Also, when there are any complaints, there's also what you call a grievance redress mechanism, which is a two-way communication mechanism which encourages, you know, free flow of information from the national level down to the beneficiaries and vice versa. So that also gives a platform for the communities to be able to air out any grievances which they will be having. Mm-hmm. In terms of the impact or the outcomes of these particular programs, you would find that they are quite a lot. But maybe just to talk about a few, mm-hmm, where I did mention earlier, the prioritization of beneficiary, the registration of women, mm, as part of the beneficiaries, where we've been able to, you know, ensure that we influence, the committees to include at least 47% of the members in those decision-making processes being women. For me, which is quite a very big, outcome. Secondly, I talked about earlier the catalyzation of the local economies, which is quite critical in terms of making sure that we have, you know, the local economies which are working, mm, which then benefit not just the beneficiaries themselves, mm, but the wider community as well. Then also the social cohesion which this project have brought in terms of making sure that there is that social fabric within the communities. Mm. And lastly, we saw quite a lot of small businesses which the beneficiaries have started with the cash which they received.
some of which are functional up to now. I think we had an opportunity late last year to visit one of the communities here in Juba with Dr. Canisio and also the country manager for the World Bank, where even after a year of assistance, we managed to see quite a lot of women who are still operating tea shops and quite you know, other forms of businesses. So these are some of the things which you can be able to see through the support of the project.
Thanks, Leslie. Let's hear from Meshek.
Yeah, Gabriel, let me mention two examples that give me a lot of encouragement. First, as I said, for South Sudan, there are positive things happening. That production last year, rising to 900,000 metric tons, leaving us with this gap of 600,000. But Gabriel, this happened in 4% of the land. When you look at that contribution of 900,000, particularly in terms of the age groups, you will find that those in the 70s going up contributed a lot, followed by those ones until 2000. If we can have this group of 2000 going forward, and you know those one born in 2000 going forward, they're not young people now, they're 23. They're 23 years. They were able to work on 10% of the land. If that group can come in and go back to the farms, then by themselves they can do another 4%, and this food gap will have been finished.
Yeah.
Second, during this race, we were with Dr. Canisio on Sunday in Bor. Over 10 trucks were there carrying fish going to DRC. So South Sudan is exporting.
Wow.
It's exporting.
Yeah.
So if we start to consolidate this
gains, and so they were beneficiaries of this support.
Yeah. So if we start to consolidate these gains, then this country will really, really move forward.
Yeah.
So as Dr. Canisio said, there are these negative things, negative narrative. But let's look at areas which are low-lying, then we can tap.
Let me have this question also for both of you, for FAO. And, you know, agriculture, food security is strongly connected to the application of technology. You can speak about water harvesting technologies, availability of water, because now we are hearing even the areas that were inundated last year, they are experiencing droughts, especially in eastern Equatoria. You speak about fertilizers, you speak about landscape whatsoever, and mechanized farming. Most of our people are now using very rudimentary kind of equipment. So quickly, what are the prospects of increasing production in more intelligent ways or smart ways? Meshek.
Yeah. As I said, last year you find that the country also worked on about 1 million hectares of land. So if we had a good productivity level, that would have been enhanced. The production would have come out strongly. A second example, just to show you this example of productivity, is that when you look at the cattle here, last month we had a cattle competition, and the cow that won the prize for the milking was able to milk 4.8 liters. Just here across in Kenya, the cows are milking 20 per day.
Wow.
So even, let's not complicate the technology. This cow in South Sudan is lacking three important things. First is that, Gabriel, milk is 90% water. So if this cow is not drinking enough water, where is the milk going to come from? So it's not a complicated technology to make sure that the cow is drinking enough
water.
Second, milk is manufactured in any animal, even human beings, when they are resting. Now this cow that is walking from Jonglei, it wants to go to Iquitos, it wants to go. When is it going to process?
It's shedding the
when is it going to process the milk? So if we can sort out these two, so that it does, we don't give this picture that we need very, very extensive technology.
Yeah, amazing.
Make sure that happens, so that even with what we have, That's what we want to stress. If those born after 2000 can engage deeply in the farming to aid these ones born in the 70s, then we can move forward. So it's a matter of the technology is there, but we can begin working, as Dr. Kanizo says, that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a step. Yeah. Let's take that step.
Yes, Leslie.
Maybe just to add to what Mishek has talked about is also looking at the basics, right, in terms of what we can do to support the agricultural sector moving forward. Some of the things which also UNOPS does is quite a lot of work in infrastructure, opening up of roads, for example, to make sure that there is that free flow of inputs from one point to the other, as well as the outputs coming from the different areas. Also harnessing, the solar energy for post-harvest handling and other things. I think it's some of the things which you can look at, which are really low-hanging fruits, which can be able to support the different farmers in the different locations.
Yeah, very interesting to hear that. Dr. Kanisio, maybe you can add something there and also give us an idea what is the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security is planning for South Sudan to be food secure in the near future, working, of course, with your partners.
The plan has already started, and what the partners are implementing are the very plans of the government. We have got plans packaged in what is called CAMP, the Comprehensive Agriculture Master Plan. This is, a flagship program of the government and the ministry to move and transform agriculture from where it is now to a commercialized surplus producer, industry, not just like a fallback kind of activity.
Yeah.
We want now the farmer to become an entrepreneur, farming for food and income. So we have these plans. Not just in the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, the Ministry of Livestock and Fisheries, the Ministry of Environment and Forestry, the Ministry of Water Resources. We have plans to even revive the former agricultural schemes, as well as developing the small scale. So this, what is happening, is just actually part of it, and we have actually all those plans. The only constraint is availability of funds. Let me mention one very important, thing to the question you asked about what is the impact of all this.
Yeah,
I think people don't feel it. If we go 4 or 5 years back, we were totally reliant on food coming from across the border, including vegetables, fresh vegetables. When there is any problem on the road, you find markets dry up, no vegetables. But now who is feeling that? How many times the truckers stop their trucks and they're not coming to South Sudan? Nothing is felt. The greens are there because now most of the vegetables are being produced locally. And this is the result of these projects, distributing improved seeds, developing actually the way people are doing. It is a slow process, but people can feel it.
Now, as we are coming to the concluding the minutes of this discussion with Dr. John Canisio and from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, and Meshek Malo from Food and Agriculture Organization, and Leslie Mhara from the United Nations Office for Project Services. Let's give each of you concluding remarks in terms of messages. Meshek, you have been focusing on message of hope, message of optimism, that things are not really that bad and we shouldn't lose hope. From my engagement in some areas, especially for our people in Bahar Ghazal, for example, it seems like the young people you are speaking about, they are not really enthusiastic about picking the hose and going there to till the land and all. They are leaving it to the women, mostly. And there is a culture that is creeping in, which like quick gains. You make easy things here, linger around, loiter around, and officials are, even commissioners are running after people. Don't play dominoes, don't do this, you go to farm first and all this. So I need to hear your message in that line.
Yeah, Gabriel, this is really a passionate call. We know that agriculture may not be that attractive, or now the young people the other day in the university, they told me that agriculture is not sexy. It's not sexy enough. If one actually commented that if someone comes and you say you're in agriculture, a young person, 23, and the other guy comes with his motorbike or this Ripchak, then he can dislodge you in a dating competition because this motorbike issue. Mm. But at the end of the day, agriculture is becoming a multi-billion business around the world. The business of food, because people have to eat. And the way the country is going, we are really hopeful and praying that peace is consolidated.
Yeah.
As I said, 30% of the Kenyan economy is still through cooperative movement, small aggregation. So the young people should be look out at this opportunity. And I accept that the working the land is dirty, but there is gains. So those who join early will gain. I really encourage them.
Thank you for that. Let's hear from Leslie Mhara.
Yeah, maybe a few last words to the listeners for me would be, you know, like one of the philosophers said, that if you want to go fast, walk alone, but if you want to go far, you have to move together as a group. So I really want to encourage all partners, under the leadership of the government, to continue with these small steps, like what Dr. Kanisha said. A journey of 1,000 miles start with one step. So I'm sure we are in the right direction, to turning the lives of the people of South Sudan.
Last but not least, Dr. John Canisio.
I just want to assure the farmers and rural people in our country, beloved South Sudan, that the government did not abandon them. The government is working hard to transform their livelihoods, their lives, ensure food security is achieved. And that is why the government is looking for resources, even what it does not have, like from the World Bank. The Minister of Agriculture now more than $200 million, and more are coming, like $30 million are coming for emergency food crisis, and much more from other donors. This is all actually geared towards improving their livelihoods. So let people have hope, and definitely the youth will come back, because the technology is going to be made available to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. John Canisio, Undersecretary for Agriculture and Food Security in the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security. Thank you, Meshek Malo, Representative of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, and Leslie Mhara, Acting Country Manager for the United Nations Office for Project Services. Pleasure listening to you, and I hope and I wish you all the best in your endeavors and attempts to change the lives of our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that is all from me today on Nationwide Discussion Hour on Radio Maria. I'm Gabriel Shadar. Thanks for listening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Maria.